Welcome to part two of our interview with Christy Sumner about the haunted Henry River Mill Village. What has been for you some of the most compelling evidence you've ever gotten using that tool, whether it be on this investigation or others?
Okay. All right. Great question. Recently, again, collaborating with Miranda, my entire group and Miranda went to Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary in Petros, Tennessee. And we've actually done two investigations there. The second one was with Miranda. And the name of her paranormal group is Ghost Biker Explorations. So she's the solo investigator, but her logo is a motorcycle. And she was wearing that T-shirt that night. It said Ghost Biker Explorations, and it had the motorcycle headlight on her shirt. So she was in the cell, again, connected to the spirit box, blindfolded. And we were all the way down at the end of the cell block. And while we were there and asking questions, she was giving names as we were asking, what's your name? And she, you know, we were asking, how long is your prison sentence? And she was giving numbers. But then outside, there was a dirt bike that we could hear. It was very faint and you could hear it on our audio, but we could hear it. Miranda couldn't. And so my sister Jenny said, what is that? And I said, I think it's a car. And Miranda yells out, motorcycle. And again, she couldn't hear the motorcycle. So I don't know if she was saying motorcycle because the spirit told her is saying motorcycle because it's on her shirt or because the motorcycle was outside. But to me, when we heard her say motorcycle, we all gasped and said, I mean, that's pretty compelling evidence to us. So that was one example. And then again, I'll go back to the Ma Barker house. That one is interesting because it is, the house sits in the middle of nowhere, and our little spirit box does not have the antenna width to pick up radio stations, I think, from a great distance. So all of what we heard that night was static, except for the responses that we got, as I mentioned before, the someone's up here when we were upstairs in the room where Ma and Fred Barker were killed. And then also when I said, can you say the name Blackburn, which was the alias Ma and Fred used that when they rented the house, the name Blackburn clearly came through on the spirit box. So those instances to me are probably the most compelling pieces of evidence that we have received while using the spirit box.
It's such an interesting tool to me because you have mm-hmm. to, it almost requires you to understand or believe that the spirit can almost foretell what is the future to a certain extent. If they're able to know, because they'd have to have knowledge of what is about to be broadcast to then push that certain signal, that specific frequency that's picking the word that is going to be relevant to what their message is out there. Because if I'm understanding correctly, it's not like it's just grabbing words here. This is scanning frequencies. This is grabbing whatever happens to be broadcast at that moment in time. So there better damn well be something relevant to the answer of a question on the air at that moment for it to make sense. And it's kind of a exercise in timing, an exercise in there's just so many things at play that make it very compelling to me, even more so than the type of spirit box that just use like a large bank of words that just shoot out mm-hmm. things.
Absolutely. And I agree with you. I do think it's different than the obelisk, which is what you're talking about with the word bank.
Yeah.
But it's my understanding, and again, I'm going to put this out there first and foremost, I am not a spirit box expert. Mm-hmm. I do not profess to be a spirit box expert. But it's my understanding on how this works is it doesn't so much use the words that's being spoken on a radio frequency. What it does is it speaks through the frequencies.
Okay.
So it while it's going to it's not looking for a radio station that's saying, I am up here. It's speaking through the static saying, I am up here. So essentially speaking through the white noise, if you will.
Okay.
So when you're listening to it and how I listen to it, I put on headphones, I put the volume up to 100 when I'm reviewing the evidence for this. it's kind of like you don't listen to any words that's being spoken through on the radio. You're listening to words being spoken through the radio,
I see
if that makes sense.
Sure. Some of the things that I've heard when I've heard evidence being played back, just being a radio person for 25 years, when I hear some of it, I go, oh, that's a newscaster saying this word. The next one is, oh, that's a commercial for McDonald's. And that's, you know, the word big just came out. And I can identify some of these things. I get what you're saying. And I've heard evidence that is like that as well, where it clearly is not super audible to the point of I can identify the type of delivery that word is coming from. But I have heard evidence, too, where it is essentially... It is like it's pieced together words from different broadcasts, almost as if you were to kidnap someone and then write the serial killer note and clip out pieces from, you know, ads in a magazine. That to me is what it kind of feels like in some cases, where it's like, you know, there's a letter A from this ad and there's B from this. And that's kind of what I've heard several Spirit Box evidence played back as. But it almost seems that it can be it's designed for the latter, for what you had mentioned, more so than what I was thinking.
And honestly, that's how I listen to it. That's when I review it. That's what I listen for. I mean, if I hear, you know, Frank in Cincinnati telling me the weather forecast, obviously I'm not listening to that. I'm listening to what's, for lack of a better term, between the bars, between the static. And that to me is what came out. So if you were to watch, you know, our Ma Barker episode, when it says someone's up here, or that was Kate, or Alvin Karpis, it doesn't sound to me like on a radio station per se. It sounds like it's carrying through that white noise, if you will. And that's how I hear it. So to me, if I'm listening to it and I hear something that sounds like it's coming through the radio, I don't think that's evidence. Okay. And there's been times where, you know, I'll listen. I mean, we have the Spirit Box running for an hour. I do the playback and I hear nothing. So to me, the more you listen to it, the more you try to listen through that static. I guess the best way that I can describe it is, you know, probably back in the mid-90s or whatever, when they had those books that came out that there's one picture that's made up a bunch of little pictures, and you're supposed to relax your eyes and a scene is supposed to come through that picture.
Yeah.
That's what I equate it to.
Okay.
You're supposed, yeah, I mean, in my mind, I relax and I listen through the noise. And that's where I hear stuff. And if that's the case, then that's what I put out there as evidence, because I can't explain that. I can't explain why, you know, through the noise, the word Blackburn comes up when I specifically asked it to say the word Blackburn. And there's no other context that I can think of that a radio station would be saying the name Blackburn at that time.
That makes sense. You've enlightened me on a way to look at this and try to understand it better through the reference of 90s dot pictures that we would stare at in the shopping mall outside of the Sam Goody. Hey, look, there's a new kiosk. I see a dinosaur, don't you? I don't see shit.
Yeah. Relax your eyes, put your nose on it, pull the hood back, and, you know, boom, you're supposed to be, you know, Santa Claus in the snowflake.
You know, with all the revival of 90s things in the last handful of years, when are we going to see this come back? And I guess maybe when malls come back, it'll make a revival. But,
Probably,
I think I saw it like twice in my life. I know it was an amazing moment too. I still remember it. It was a dinosaur, and that's
and you're like, oh, you know, your entire worldview is turned on its edge when you see it. I get it.
I've yet to have anything as compelling as that day in the shopping mall in 1997. Yeah. Let's go back to talking about ghosts. I know you said earlier you feel like a majority of the haunting activity in this town is residual, and that's understandable. But it does sound like there's some conscious things, conscious entities here too. The way that they're sometimes able to give you answers through a spirit box, or just in some other evidence things that you had mentioned earlier, where it feels maybe it is not all just residual. Talk to that a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, I do think for Henry River Mill Village, I do think that there is both aspects. Like I said, we did have some residual, what I would think is residual EVPs. Again, back to the kitchen that we are in, we did get an EVP that's saying that's a lot of food. So it's, in my mind, it's just something, you know, somebody's going through their normal day or maybe looking at a Thanksgiving meal and they say that's a lot of food and that's just an imprint on time and it will just kind of play back in that area. But we did specifically in the general store is where we spent probably half the night, I guess, just because we were getting a lot of activity there. I think that's where we encountered the most activity that was in direct response to what we were asking, again, with the spirit box. And then also down in the basement, we had a very compelling flashlight session. We had four flashlights set up. Miranda had set her flashlights out there. And, you know, a lot of people can go either way on the flashlights. Some really believe it, some don't. But again, if you couple it with the other evidence that we were getting, to me, it was a very compelling experiment because, you know, we had a flashlight sitting on a cinder block. And at one point, Miranda said, can you turn off the light on the table and turn on the one on the cinder block? And it happened in that sequence. And then, you know, we had Miranda carries her flashlights in a little bag that says USA on the side. And as we were walking up the stairs, we got an EVP that said America. And so that was, again, compelling to us that it was somehow seeing that bag. So that, you know, it's stuff like that, that, again, coupled with everything else that we were experiencing that night, that led us to believe, hey, there's something we feel paranormal going on here. And so I do think it's a good mix of both residual and intelligent haunting.
Sure. I got to ask, what has the reaction been from former residents of Henry River Mill Village to this attention on their former town as being this kind of paranormal hotbed? Have you heard any of those stories?
Absolutely. That is a fantastic question. After we released our video, Miranda Ghostbiker and I were asked to come back in October of last year and give a presentation on our investigation and what we found. And they have a festival every October called Booze and Brews. And so we were giving a talk at that Booze and Brews event, which is a fundraiser for Henry River Mill Village. And there were several people in the audience that, you know, kind of voiced their concerns about this being disrespectful, that, you know, they felt that we weren't, you know, really paying attention to the history of the village. And we kindly disagreed with that because what we both do, both Miranda and I, is we're very much historically driven. If we did not find any paranormal activity, you know, we would still highlight Henry River Mill Village for its place in time and history and what it contributed to the state and the community. So, you know, for us, the paranormal is just a bonus, secondary aspect of what we do. So we did have that kind of pushback, but the majority of the people that we spoke to, you know, it's funny when you say you're a paranormal investigator, you either get somebody that looks at you like you've got three heads or they want to tell you their ghost story. So we did have several former residents come up or people that were grandchildren of former residents come up to us and say, you know, thank you for what you did and how you highlighted this. And my grandparents witness such and such, or, you know, I came here with my mom and dad one time and we saw, you know, this door close, or we heard footsteps in the general store. So we did get a little bit of pushback for it, but mostly our response to what we did in our videos and the investigation process has been 100% positive. You know, we really like to, when we go to these locations, we really like to stay in contact with the owners and, you know, help them in any way that we can with the preservation efforts. And to us, Henry River Mill Village, the owners now are 100% on board with what we've done. And, you know, we really congratulate them for preserving the history of the village. And again, just getting the knowledge out there of what it's contributed to the community and the state.
What do you think the future holds for this town as far as its, obviously the historical value is definitely there. It's a matter of probably of keeping it up and keeping people interested in visiting and making it a viable thing to see. But when, in your opinion, what do you think the future holds for Henry River Mill Village 20, 30, 40 years down the road?
Well, you know, it depends on, you know, how invested the owners are going to be. And I do think they're 100% invested. But right now it's kind of twofold. They're really putting forth a financial campaign to keep Henry River Mill Village running as a tourist location where you can come and see what these mill villages were like. And I 100% applaud them for that. The downside is you have those people who don't want to obey the law. So they have a problem with trespassers. They have a problem with people going in and, you know, either breaking the windows or in some cases trying to take the windows or doorknobs or something like that for their vintage value, I guess. So that to me is very disheartening. And they're trying to combat, the owners are trying to combat that in every way that they can. But, you know, it takes time. It takes money to do that. But slowly they are refurbishing some of the houses. You know, they've got some construction efforts on some of the houses to bring them back up to really what they look like in the grandeur period of Henry River Mill Village. So they've got that going on. They've got several fundraisers throughout the year. As I said, they're kind of globbing on to the notoriety from the Hunger Games. Again, it was District 12 in the Hunger Games. Mm-hmm. They're trying to promote it as a destination for motorcycle tours because it is kind of on an interesting route there up through Hickory and the Blue Ridge Parkway and such. So that would be a very cool stop if you're into motorcycles like Ghost Biker Exploration is, you know, to stop there and kind of see that history. But I hope the future is long-term for the village just because, you know, when you walk in there and you walk into the general store and you walk into these buildings, these houses, it really is stepping back in time. And, you know, to us, you know, like I said, even though we are billing ourselves as paranormal investigators, I really see us more as historical journalists, if you will, because we want to categorize what is what it looked like and really what its future could be if people just really paid attention to the history of it.
That wraps up part two of our interview with Christy Sumner about the haunted Henry River Mill Village. Thank you to Christy for joining us again today and sharing her experiences on the program. Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for the support and thanks for listening.